You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
That's correct. You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM. We're very lucky to be joined today by Andrew Smith. Kia ora, Andrew. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm good, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming up to the studio. What a treat. We're here to talk about some New Zealand garage rock classics.
Yes, indeed.
Are you a big garage rock fan?
Yes, I was and still am.
Lovely. I mean, this might feel like a stupid question, but there seems to be endless variations of rock. So what is it about garage rock that makes it sort of stand apart from the rest?
I think there's a real continuity and a real authenticity to garage rock. So it comes out of the, you know, back in the 60s when big groups and R&B groups were starting to electrify their sound. So you're getting better equipment, better speakers, better amplifiers, effects boxes, things like that. So the volume is going up, the energy level is going up. Mm-hmm. But they're still maintaining a degree of melody which came with the previous types of music.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this article that you've written for Audio Culture. You've sort of made a grand return to Audio Culture. You were there, you're telling us you were there in the beginning, and then you've had a break, and now you've come back, and you're writing a bit more now.
That's right, yes.
And this piece is 10 New Zealand garage rock classics. We've got a list. It's got a sort of chronological list that goes all the way from 1967 until 2002. So obviously garage rock is a huge part of our musical history. And you sort of start things off by talking about John Baker. Who's that guy?
Well, when I met John for the first time, he was the lead singer for a band called the Psycho Daisies.
Yeah.
And they were doing a lot of garage rock music. So there were a lot of compilations coming out of regional bands from the States, the UK, New Zealand and Australia. Mm. And they were playing covers of some of those quite obscure songs. They were the equivalents of, say, Fly Nun Records in the early days, maybe out of Wisconsin or Scotland, or, you know, out of the main centres of music production.
Groovy. Very cool.
Shall we talk about a song? We've got a few songs from the list that you want to sort of go through and chat about, eh?
That's right.
So the first song that you've got for us is Charles R&B.
Chance R&B.
Talk to us about this track that you've chosen.
Yes, I think I picked this one specifically because it emphasises a point about the continuity of the sound and of the influences. It was originally recorded in Melbourne in early 1967 when Chance R&B moved over from Christchurch. And it was never released at the time. John Baker came across it when he was compiling Chance R&B in the 90s.
Whoa.
So this is the first time we've actually heard it. And the later groups like the D4 and the bands that came later would have been hearing this in almost real time. So it was an immediate influence, but from way back.
Wow.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Give it a spin, eh? Groovy.
Yeah. Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
That's the Chance R&B with 1-2 Brown Eyes. That's a rockin' track.
That is a rockin' track.
Originally by a band called Them with Van Morrison.
Oh, so this is a cover.
It's a cover. Yeah, yes, okay, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Van Morrison. Awesome.
Love Van Morrison.
A lot of influences in there, eh? We were just talking on off air about a lot of the sort of soul and funk influences that you can hear in that track, eh? It's sort of not what when I first think of garage rock, it's not what I would necessarily imagine, but I guess that just shows how much the sound has evolved over the years.
Yeah, and these groups probably evolved through maybe two or three sets of different influences over their lifetime. Right. These days, groups tend to focus on one sound, but back then, it was really about what was breaking in the charts or what they were listening to. So you might have had, they started off as an instrumental band, Chance R&B, became a beat band, and then got into the R&B music and soul music.
Damn, wicked. And you were telling us they'll do an R&B set and then they'll do a soul set.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Which was quite normal in New Zealand, but when they got to Melbourne, they found that they couldn't do both. There was so much work over there, they either had to do a soul set in one club and an R&B set in another club.
Got to pick your niche.
What? That is so wicked, man. What the heck?
Someone's texted in, this music is awesome.
And you're damn right.
It is awesome.
So you were telling us you went around and interviewed these, I guess, old garage rock bands in the 90s.
Yes, John Baker was a real fanatic. He was starting to get to the point where he wanted to compile the local response, the local version of that 60s garage rock. But we didn't have the stories. We had the records and we could hear the songs, but these guys and everybody had gone back to life, and you can't sustain a living in New Zealand. These were second-tier bands often, maybe really important within their local region. But they were all everywhere. They were town clerks, mechanics, union officials, all sorts of jobs back then. But one thing they had in common is they all remembered this era fondly and had great memories of it. So we were able to tap into that.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. Should we listen to the next track?
Yeah, so now we go to 1988, The Axel Grinders, Joe Orton's Wedding. Talk to us about this track.
Okay, it was covered later on by the D4 on one of their B-sides, but the D4 probably would have heard it from the CD, which was never actually issued at the time. I can remember John giving it to me one day, and it didn't have a cover. It is as you've got it there. And I listened to it, and there's this fantastic song on it, but it never came out. That was 1994.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
So somehow the D4 heard it, probably on that CD, and covered it on the B-side of one of their songs. It's by a Christchurch band, the Axel Grinders. They had a variety of sound, but they could do a nice, stoogey, upbeat punk song, and this is one of those songs.
Mm. Awesome.
Wicked. Let's give it a spin.
Yep.
Thank you. What's going to happen with the Axel Grinders? I mean, are they going to get back together?
Well, you know, if someone offers to record us an album or something, we'll get together and do it. Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah. Didn't you say someone was going to do something?
Yeah, the same guy that put together that, what's it called? Wild Things compilation.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, bummer. Yeah.
Won't be very good.
Do you reckon you'll have to wait 3 years as well?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't think this one's...
Little bonus interview at the end there. Thank you, 95 BFM Library.
Yeah.
Joe Orton's Wedding from Axel Grinders. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Audio Culture on 95 BFM. We're very lucky to be joined by Andrew Schmidt in the studio to talk about garage rock New Zealand classics. Now, that feels like a real classic. And, I mean, if there's one thing we do well in Aotearoa, it's a little punk rock number with a ripping guitar solo, eh?
Although, like, listening to this whole lineage and history, it's so reminiscent of, like, the Zam Rock movement in Zambia and, like, the influences of, like, American and British rock. And the sound is almost like they've got some of the same sonic influences, which is so cool to see them both sprouting up in totally different parts of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at almost different times as well, I guess, because there would have been sort of a delay in some stuff making its way to New Zealand, and that would impact things as well a lot, I guess.
Definitely. In the early days, it was mostly on this collecting songs from the States. But as time went on, you had Japan, Cambodia, no doubt parts of Africa as well. Mm. Yeah, this was a worldwide movement.
So epic. This is so epic.
Someone's texted that they picked up an Axel Grinders album from Flying Out a couple of years ago, so possibly still available.
That's good
to know. There is such a broad period of history that you cover within this list, so I implore everyone to go and have a look and have a listen to all of the tracks in here. But we're going to jump forward a little bit now to the sort of early 2000s. The D4 and the Datsuns... I can't remember who it was from Audio Culture that I talked about, but we have had a segment talking about these guys before, and this whole sort of like revival of rock and roll that took place in the early 2000s. Talk to us a little bit about where that came from.
I think I've just been doing some digging into the 90s, and I think we really came into our own as a rock and roll nation in that decade. Previous to that, the indie music was more folk rock influenced. It didn't have that power and that solidity in the middle of it, and the drums and the bass and that really sharp, distorted guitar.
Yeah.
But definitely once we got going on it, we produced some very good bands and some very good songs.
Yeah, and the legend Jimmy Christmas in here. I love Jimmy Christmas so much. So cool. Tell us a little bit about the D4, because they've had a bit of an illustrious career. I know a lot of people are fans of the D4.
Fantastic band. Two brilliant records. If you get a chance to pick up the singles, flop them over, because there's some amazing covers on the singles. And they were clearly listening to a lot of the broader garage rock canon. There's a great song called John Rock by a band called The Dogs out of Detroit via LA. And you only really got to that song if you were listening to some of the punk rock and garage punk compilations that were coming out in the 1990s. They had a fantastic year. But Jimmy and Dion were an amazing songwriting combination.
Yeah.
There were very few duds over the entire catalogue that they put out. We're going to play one song, but we could easily play a dozen songs.
100%.
Yeah, it feels so true to the tradition of garage rock as well. I mean, like we talk about those covers. And I mean, the first song we listened to, the Chance R&B, was a cover, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And then, yeah, covers, compilations, just that cross-pollination of ideas and influences just seems so true to the ethos of garage rock. Would you agree?
They were massive music fans, all of them, and they were probably fans before they even got to be in bands. So a lot of those influences are coming through their own music, but they were pretty broad times as far as what was available to buy and to listen to.
That's awesome. We're gonna finish by listening to Exit to the City by the D4. Tell us why you chose this song.
I just love the video, really.
The video, I was just looking at it before. It's pretty crazy. They're like in the back of a van or something, right?
Yeah, and I did a tour with Dion when he was in the previous band, Nothing At All.
Yeah.
And we were crammed into a very small space for probably about a week. So it's sort of partly reminiscent of that, but it's also just fun. I mean, who hasn't done that on the weekend? Someone's come around, loaded up the car with your mates into the city to see a band at one of the local venues or, party.
Amazing. We're going to take a listen. Thank you so much, Andrew, for chatting with us. It's been a pleasure to learn more about some garage rock classics. Everybody can head to audioculture.co.nz to read Andrew's article.
was
Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz. It's just fascinating.